Glenn Cameron, Senior Product Marketing Manager at Google, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
We're very happy to have you here. And we discussed Dolphin Jamma when it came out and how it just blew our minds, because we had already discussed in the past how communication with animals could be sort of this next frontier when it came to the conversation aspects of LLMs, sort of like that collar that the dog from Up wears, right, and talks to humans. Dolphin Jamma is not quite like that, but for listeners who might have missed the episode that we discussed it, would you mind introducing Dolphin Jamma and telling folks why it is so damn cool?
Yeah, so Dolphin Jamma is the first large language model for dolphins. You can think of it like Gemini or any chat app, but instead of for humans, it's for dolphins. So if a dolphin is to speak to it, it will continue the dolphin's sentence. So like LLMs are trained to predict the next token in like sentences. So you can think of a token as a word or a part of a word. And so like in order to be able to produce that next token, you have to have a lot of knowledge to do so. Imagine like finishing a sentence like the Eiffel Tower is in. To know how to finish that sentence, you have to have knowledge. And so that's what we've done with Dolphin Jamma. We've trained it to understand the dolphin vocalizations so it can predict the next dolphin word, essentially.
So we trained these models with basically the whole internet, encyclopedias and all of that. So we had a lot of content to begin with, like to do this supervised training, let's say. But when you talk about dolphins, like how well equipped are we to be able to create models that can, that won't hallucinate too much, let's say?
Yeah, you know, that's where Dr. Denise Herzing comes in. She is a world-class dolphin communication researcher. She's been doing this kind of work for 40 years. And so she actually goes out and into the ocean and dives and actually tries to communicate with dolphins. And she's been doing it for a long time. And so she's been collecting a data set over that time period. And we were able to partner with her and use that as our training data for Dolphin Jamma. And also she helps out with a lot of the like understanding what those like spectrograms and stuff. Spectrograms are ways you can view audio. And she can kind of look at them and understand things. Also, Professor Thad Starner, really interesting guy. He was kind of one of the originators of Google Glass. You know, he's like a wearable computing pioneer, and even invented the term augmented reality. He's the first person to use that word. And so he builds this wearable computer for Denise that she goes down underwater and like it can listen to dolphin sounds. It can like classify them. He has a little like they call it the Wonder Woman wearable where they can click a button. It'll make a generated dolphin sound so they can kind of have an interesting bidirectional, the beginnings of a bidirectional conversation. So the first attempts at it.
That's amazing. And also, like, you called it Jamma, right? Is it like just a fine tuning of the original Jamma, Jamma 2, Jamma 3? Or because, like, for me, it wouldn't make sense because Jamma is trained in human language. So if you try to just like fine tune using this kind of like dolphin vocalizations, it's just going to hallucinate most of the time, basically, right? It's going to try to create human language as well.
It's not the Jamma model. The Jamma models so far are, they've been text in, text out. The most recent one is text and image in, text out. This is an audio in, audio out model. Mm-hmm. And so we did use a lot of the knowledge from like training Jamma models, and the Jamma team trained it. But we also partnered with some of our audio understanding people, some of the pioneers in like speech generation and things like that. And we were able to make a lot of progress based on this kind of partnerships. And that's kind of what's cool about Dolphin Jamma. You know, we took these amazing people, pioneers in dolphin communications, pioneers in wearable computing, pioneers in audio AI, and pioneers in LLMs, like on-device LLMs, put them all together, and now we have this really incredible thing, or the start of something really incredible.
And has there been enough time to maybe have breakthroughs or see results that happened because of Dolphin Jamma, an analysis or comprehension that people, scientists might have thought about before, but now it's hard proof of, insert your hard proof here.
So their season, they do a season once a year. They go out in the summers. They go out to see a very specific pod of dolphins. They've been following this very specific pod of spotted Atlantic dolphins for a long time, for generations of the family. That starts on May 23rd. And what they've done now is they've just been setting up their hardware, getting it all ready to go out there. But the work starts then. But what we have seen is that there's these really interesting like burst pulses. These are like these really intense, like really like noisy, like spectrograms that humans can't interpret and humans can't generate. But Dolphin Jamma can generate these things. So they can generate these dolphin sounds. And we're using that as training data for classifiers and things that we couldn't do before. So right now we're working on upgrading the current classifiers to work better. And then there's all kinds of interesting other things we're working on for like Dolphin Gemma 2 and 3 and stuff like that.
Amazing. And do you see it going back as well? Because you said that the people who were mostly a part of the creation of Dolphin Gemma was the people who are dealing with audio at Google DeepMind. And can you see at least like some applications on bringing this back, like the knowledge that they used to create Dolphin Gemma, bring it back to the following Gemma models or Gemini models even?
Probably. You know, we're still early days, but I think there's a lot of really interesting potential. And I think this is going to go in really interesting directions. So I'm pretty excited about all that stuff. I can imagine, you know, one day there's one foundation model that can do everything, right? Not just like a Dolphin Gemma, but like an everything model. So we'll see what happens.
Awesome. And what was your part in the project?
So, you know, I think my biggest contribution to the project was putting the people together. You know, I've been working with Professor Starner for a few years on sign language AI, you know, trying to help. We worked on a project where we're trying to help the parents of deaf children learn to sign through an AI game. And he mentioned this dolphin thing a couple years ago to me. I was like, what? You're trying to talk to dolphins? And it really, you know, really got my attention. And at the time, I wasn't working on Gemma. I was working on device AI with MediaPipe. But then I started working on Gemma and kind of the idea popped in my head. What if we team these people up, you know? And so my biggest role, I guess, was getting everyone excited about it and kind of, you know, recruiting people to help build this thing. And then after that, I did a lot of work on the, like, actually using Dolphin Gemma. So I probably use it more than anybody, just preparing it, trying to get it all ready for everyone. So that's been pretty fun.
You're the Nick Fury of the project then, just assembling the Avengers.
That's a nice way to think of it. I appreciate that.
How do you test it, actually, like yourself? Because you said like the doctor is the person who specialized in understanding these kinds of vocalizations. So did you learn dolphin, basically?
I sit in a meet. So every week, every Friday, we have a meeting with the dolphin research team at Georgia Tech. And I'm always a part of those meetings. So I've been listening in for a while and getting to know all those people. And I have been looking at it, trying to learn about it, like reading the papers on it and getting up to speed on things like that. So I know a little bit. Not an expert, but I'm getting there.
Can you say something in dolphin for us?
But Thad, the Professor Starner, he actually can, and he does. So dolphins have names. Uh-huh. They call them signature whistles. But essentially, you go down and you play one of these names, and you play it. That particular dolphin will come look for you. Right? That's kind of insane. Like, I've never heard of any other animal that does that. I think dolphins are much smarter than people realize. I think animals are much smarter than people realize in general. We just can't talk to them. So yeah, he has his own like name whistle, and he'll do that in meetings. So maybe one day I can, but not yet.
Right. I was thinking actually about that because a few months ago I heard two episodes of one of my favorite podcasts, which is 20,000 Hertz, and one was specifically about communication with dogs, and the other one specifically about communication with cats, and it was sort of a different. It's just someone had a dog and got this soundboard with food, walk, I love you, cuddle, I don't know. And then by using it through that dog's entire life, they had this sort of common with many, many words, dozens of words that they could communicate, but it was based on human language, right? And from the study, if I got it right, there was this part that you were actually able to teach a new word to the dolphin with the vocalization, was that it?
Yeah, they actually only teach them new words. And that's because years ago, Dr. Hersing went underwater and played some words that their words, and the dolphins got mad at her. They went by the dolphin threatening her. And she's like, ooh, I don't know what I did, but I'm not going to do it again, you know? So now they're going down there, they're doing new words so they don't accidentally insult the dolphins since they don't understand like all the etiquette.
Wow. She said like the dolphin F word or something.
Don't know. You know, we're not there yet. So got to be careful. So they make up words like synthetic whistles, they call them, for like scarf, seagrass. And one of the things they're trying to do is they're trying to teach the dolphins new words. So they have a scarf, right? Dolphins like to play with toys, and they see the scarf as a toy. They'll go down with the scarf. They'll play the scarf whistle, the generated one, and try to get the dolphin to say that word. And if the dolphin says that word, then dolphin gets a scarf and dolphin's happy. And so they have classifiers running to see if the dolphin said that word. It's pretty cool. And you mentioned the dog, you know, communication. So I have a poodle, a really awesome poodle named Einstein. Super smart dog, actually. He has a superpower where he knows how to open bottles. So if you give him like a water bottle that's empty, like he'll open it, you know, and he loves it some for some reason. And like he's like getting excited when I'm almost finished with a water bottle. But I got him some buttons off Amazon for like $10. They're little buttons, and you can record something and you can put it there, and then they'll hit the button and say that word. So I did treat and walk. I had to like get rid of these things because my dog would just constantly ask for treats. Just like treat, 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 one after another. Those are pretty fun.
And I love linguistics. Like, I'm very into this field. And I'm wondering now, this is not even a question. It's just like myself, after reading the paper, wondering if we are going to be creating kind of like dolphin dialects by using the dolphin Gemma and this kind of stuff, because we're going to teach them that a scarf is like, wah, 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 or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they may start communicating with themselves using this word, which no other dolphin in the world knows. So it's literally a dialect, right?
Yeah, one of the things they're trying to do is have the dolphins learn a word, have a dolphin learn a word, and then bring that word to their pod. And so like they teach their pod this word, and this will be a major breakthrough, the first time that we've had this kind of thing where human language has, you know, been adopted by a different species and became part of their vernacular. But yeah, it seems like the different dolphin pods all have their own kind of accent almost. Mm-hmm. And they'll even change their accent to like when they're approaching another pod. Yeah, really interesting. And even like, you know, killer whales are actually dolphins, and they're super smart, and they have different ones. So when I lived in Seattle for a little while, I went on a killer whale kind of, you know, boat ride to go look at them. And I learned that there's different ones. There's transient whales that kind of like travel, and there's local whales that just stay there in the sound. And the local whales only eat salmon, and the transient whales only eat seals and no salmon. So they're all, like, every pod of these things is different. It's really interesting.
And are you or Google DeepMind working on, like, chimp Gemma or, chimp, I don't know, whale Gemma or dog Gemma or something like that?
I can't comment on that kind of stuff.
In the future, what kind of results do you think that can emerge from this work with dolphin Gemma when it comes to maybe preservation or taking care of dolphins? How can it actually help the dolphin population? Is that accurate? I'm not sure.
Well, I think that... if we can speak to another species, I think it'll be a profound thing for us to figure out, like, and understand, like, actually how smart these animals are. And it'll kind of switch the way we think about animals and probably switch the way that we interact with them. Give us more respect for them, and vice versa. That's what I hope.
Awesome. Glenn, thank you very much for your time and your knowledge. If folks want to maybe continue this conversation with you directly, where should they go?
Probably X. You know, my username is Glenn Cameron Jr. You can check me out there.
Muito bem, espero que vocês tenham curtido. E agora, como o próprio Cameron falou que a doutora Denise Herzing estava envolvida no projeto, é com ela também que a gente vai falar, né, Fabrício?
Exatamente, é uma das muitas pessoas que eu passei a realmente admirar depois de bater um papo aqui no podcast, conhecer um pouco mais sobre a vida e a carreira dela. Então, vamos lá ver esse papo, né?
Vamos lá, doutora Denise Herzing, diretora de pesquisa no Wild Dolphin Project. Bem-vinda ao IA Sob Controle.
Thank you, great to be here.
We're very excited to have you here, and we were really impressed when we first saw the video for Dolphin Gemma and what it could do, right? And as we dug deeper and talked actually to Glenn Cameron from Google, who also worked on the project, we found out that without you, there would pretty much be no Dolphin Gemma. So how did you first get involved in the project? Did you look for Google? Did they come to you? How did it happen?
Well, it's a little interweaving story, but basically I had been working with Dr. Thad Starner, who's at Georgia Tech in Atlanta. We have been working on machine learning in general since 2010. And I've been working like with one of his PhD students and, you know, writing our own programs, et cetera. So Thad was one of the creators or technical creators on Google Glass. And so he was connected with Google. And he had been, I think, talking to them basically on and off. We had actually had some help with them over the years for things. But they really decided to get really serious about putting full force behind an AI system that could help us look at dolphin vocalizations in some detail and with powerful AI. So AI has been something I've been waiting for 40 years, because when you have a large data set and when you have signals like acoustic signals that are quite challenging for humans to not only categorize, but then just track, count, you know, analyze. So AI is a great tool. A lot of people are using it for animal communication. And yes, so we said, we've got the data. If you can throw it into your AI, play with it, let's work together. So that's kind of how it started, basically.
Awesome. And on this topic, how does it work, the process to curate, to pre-process basically 4 decades of audio and video from the Wild Dolphin Project? Like, what strategies do you use to label these vocalizations and specific behaviors before feeding it to the model?
So the model is just really fed acoustic data, basically. But our acoustic data, for example, if I give Google a wave file, it's for an encounter we have with the dolphins in the Bahamas, and we work underwater. So we have a lot of metadata that goes with that. Who was there? What species? It's usually Atlantic spotted dolphins right now. What were they doing? Were they fighting? Blah, 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 blah. So they are just getting a wave file, and they're getting lots of wave files. And they created a model based on all those data. Now, what it's going to do for us, which we haven't gotten to yet, but so it's a generative AI model, right? So it predicts something. So I could put a type of whistle or a burst pulse or whatever kind of sound into the model, and it will throw out what's likely to follow that sound from all the data that it's ingested, right? Then my job is then to go take those patterns, whether they're like, you know, whistle type 1, whistle type 3, burst pulse type 5, and say, okay, this is a regular pattern that this model is throwing out. Then I go back to the underwater video and say, what was going on during that pattern, right? So now we're going, oh, during that pattern, a mother was disciplining a calf, but they're different mothers, so maybe they have little different signals. But so that's the power of the model right now. It's not automatically linked to the video at this point, but we have all the data. So we just go back and say, okay, here are the files that those sequences, patterns, motifs, whatever you want to call them, came from. Let's look at what was going on. That, because that lets us interpret the sounds, right? If you're looking for a language or language-like structure, you have to be able to interpret it. You know, yeah, there might be structure in a lot of animal sounds, but can you tell what they're saying, what the meaning is? And then how do you test that? You know, then there's the whole, okay, let's verify our interpretation, which is probably playback in the wild, basically. So
basically the metadata was ready, has been ready for 40 years.
Yep. We collected it from the beginning, and that's what we use. You know, we have general ideas of types of sounds they make with types of behaviors or individual dolphin sounds, signature whistles, which are like a name the dolphins have that is unique. So we kind of knew a lot of that already, but what we don't know is the really intricacies of the patterns of sounds and how they're categorized and if they're repetitive or structured in some way.
So I just turned 40 and I'm painfully aware of how long 4 decades amount. So if I had built this unique data set for 4 decades of the acoustic archive and this big company came to me and said, look, we can help, but gimme, I'd be damn protective of it. So what was a concern for you for the sort of balance between Google's plans for protecting this very unique data set?
Well, sure. Yeah. But you know what? What good is the data set if you don't work it up with the tools, right? And I've worked with Google and I trust the people around it so far. You know, I mean, that's been fine. You know, the thing is, though, so the data set was used to train the model. And the model will be released to the public and or at least researchers that have other data. So, like, for example, the other researchers are not getting our data. They're getting to use the model that our data was based on. Big difference, right? So yeah, Google has the data, but you know, you've got to give people data. And these models are hungry, right? They want a lot of data. That keeps getting drilled into my head by all the computer guys, right? Like, more data, we want more. So it's kind of exciting. And yeah, I mean, this science has to use these tools. And you have to trust your colleagues, whether it's Google or a colleague from a university. And hopefully it all turns out great. And I'm excited to see what other researchers can also glean from it. It's going to be a long process. You know, they're going to do different versions of it and we'll improve it and we'll see what comes out of it. But, you know, it's kind of, I think, a new decade for looking at animal communication, basically.
Fantastic. And I'm dying to speak about the dolphins themselves. So, first of all, have you noticed over these 4 decades any change in behavior in the dolphins, like in this kind of like family, or I don't even know the species of dolphin there is there. And also when we think about the future, when we are trying to introduce what chat does, for example, like the model that is going to introduce new words into this culture, do you think about this being like a new dialect for these dolphins in the future as well?
So first question. So the dolphins we work with are Atlantic spotted dolphins, Stenella frontalis. You probably have them off Brazil, as a matter of fact. The guys we work with are resident in the Bahamas. So they're there, we believe, all year round for the most part. And because they have food, basically. So yes, we've studied them for 40 years. Yes, we've seen changes because we do a lot of other work with them. We do life history. We do some genetic collection for paternity, basic big picture health, you know, reproduction. So we have the big picture of the society as well as the individuals. But the big thing is we collect sound and underwater video. And then the other stuff I consider kind of metadata and answers a lot of biological questions. We have seen changes in the dolphins because of climate change, honestly. In 2013, we had a big food crash. Half of our resident animals moved 100 miles away to another sandbank where they set up residency, which was already inhabited by other dolphins. So it's been kind of a natural experiment, sadly, because they're looking for food. But they've survived. They've integrated. So yes, we monitor changes in. You need baseline information to monitor changes, right? Because you can see the changes. Secondly, so the chat system, which is another way we're looking for dolphin language abilities, shall we say. So the first is just looking at their natural sounds with their behavior. The second is using chat, which is an underwater computer system. And it's basically just a small vocabulary of words that label toys they like to play with in the wild. So like sargassum, seagrass, we do bring in a scarf occasionally to play because they like to drag things. And the idea with that, and it's been done in captivity a lot with many species, actually, you create an interface, try to build a bridge, and then you just create simple words. Like if you were in a human culture, maybe you'd do a word for coffee cup or hello or, you know, whatever. So with the dolphins, we just figure if they want to ask for toys from us and interact with us playing, which they do sometimes, then let's just build a system and see where they take it. You know, very simple. It's a very simple system. We don't know if they have labeled words for things. They may have words for actions. They may have words for things, maybe types of sharks, which are predator. And we know the few species that we know that label predators, like prairie dogs and vervet monkeys, it's a pretty important thing because it's around survival, right? So if you can label the type of a predator for your comrades, it helps them, right? So I suspect there's things like that in their system. It's kind of hard to get the data because we're always getting out of the water when there's a shark around. I haven't figured out that one yet, but but anyway. So, and honestly, in least captive situations, two-way interfaces have been fairly successful. If they're interacting with a human, even bonobo chimps, chimpanzees, right? These animals are social, intelligent animals, and they want interaction, right? It's not always about food and whatever. It's about, ooh, social interaction. Let's play. You're my caretaker. You're my friend. You know, you're my human conspecific, whatever. So we've tried to use that model because our spotted dolphins are quite unique. They're semi-human habituated, shall we say. They're comfortable with us in the water for the most part. We've grown up with them, so we know their personal antics, and we can work with small groups that we think are good candidates and like to play with us already. And in some ways, yeah, it does become another culture. It becomes a human-dolphin culture in some ways. But we're very careful about our protocol. For example, we won't even use a two-way system if they're doing their own behavior, right? We jump in the water with our equipment and they're like mating or fighting or whatever. We just don't do the work. What we do is we wait for, I call them windows of opportunity, where the dolphins are playing with us or interested in playing with us. And then we're like, okay, they have the time. They're not busy being dolphins. They've made time for us to play. And that's when we go into our work. So we try to be respectful of that. And over the years, you know, I've been keeping an eye on it. Like, gosh, do the female dolphins that play with us, do they not become mothers? You know, does it have an effect on their other social time with their boyfriends, you know, kind of thing? And they do. They become great mothers. Sometimes they bring their calves over and kind of show them our system. And it's like, oh, my God. But that's exactly what happened with the bonobo chimps. You know, they had a youngster with a mother, and they were trying to teach the mother. And the Kanzi, who was the young one, started using the keyboard because Kanzi had just been watching, observing what they were trying to teach mom, right? So in some ways, it's interesting. But, yeah, we would never do the work if we were interfering with their lives. That's primary to everything we do, is to try to be non-invasive, but it's to try to use this incredible opportunity not only to watch their own behavior and figure out if they're saying complicated things, but to maybe interact and open up a window or an interface, because we don't, you know, we can't meet on the same sensory system, right? We've got to create these tools. But it's been really interesting, because so many times in science you find things you aren't looking for. And one of the things we found with the dolphins is that they're trying to mimic our acoustic signals in ways we didn't even know they could. And it's kind of hard to explain, a little bit technical, but it's basically like, okay, we know this from captive work. They mimic a whistle with a tonal whistle, like, you know, you would hear it, right? But they're doing this really crazy stuff, high frequency, with clicks that mimic the contour of the whistle. So it's like, oh, wow. We better look for these signals in their natural system, because maybe they're showing us how they prefer to communicate. So follow the data, right? Got to follow the data so we see where it goes.
Awesome. I was going to ask you about ethical concerns. You just answered that, so I'm going to skip this one. But for pretty much every piece of news that we give, every interview about whatever field we host here in the podcast, there are sort of these two camps, right? The camp that is excited about the possibilities that employing AI might open, and the camp that sort of says, like, nah, this is a bridge too far. Was there sort of any, I don't know, pushback, weird reaction from the wider marine biology field to Dolphin Gemma?
I don't know yet. I've only had positive feedback, honestly. I think most of the pushback from AI comes in the taking over human jobs and creative writing, that kind of thing, I think. I mean, to me, it's a tool. Tools can be used for science and good things, and they can be used for bad things, right? I don't think it's going to be, I mean, we're using it for analytical reasons, right? So we're just passively analyzing their sounds. In the case of the fieldwork and the chat system, the only way we're using Dolphin Gemma is to increase our real-time sound recognition in the computer. So it's not really, Dolphin Gemma is not creating whistles that we play to the dolphins, for example. We are using our synthetic whistles we've created. We're just making it more efficient for us to quickly say, that dolphin just mimicked this, you know, label for sargassum. And so that just gives us more accuracy for our work. So I would say, no, there hasn't been negative for it. Now, I will say that it's important to understand, for any work with wild animals, is that not every wild animal wants to interact with a human, right? People see our work because it's beautiful, clear water, and they think, oh, the dolphins are just waiting there to interact with humans. It's like, no, they have very interesting lives. They just happen to be curious about humans. We just happen to try to put ourselves in the environment, see if they want to check us out. But if you go to, you know, some other ocean and some other dolphins, you better not assume they want you in the water, or certainly to be doing interactive work, because that's why you want to study them for, I mean, I'm biased, I like to put in a few decades before I try something. But no one has that kind of patience these days, I don't think. But I think the only problem with the AI, with the dolphin stuff, is that if people don't ground truth it, right? So if you, like, started doing something, for example, with, you know, your data set, even putting it into Dolphin Gemma, and you come out and you want to make some big claims like, oh, they have language because they have structure. I mean, scientists try not to do that, because it's already a delicate area. You know, big claims take big evidence, right? So as a scientist, you can't be making these big conclusions without looking at those data carefully. So I think that's the danger, is that people just get sloppy, or maybe, how shall I say this, maybe not legitimate researchers use it for their own gain, like, oh, you know, let's go on a boat and talk to dolphins and we'll charge you $10,000, you know, I mean, and this stuff happens, right? It definitely happens. So that's my big concern. I've been concerned with that issue around the two-way system, because we've had requests like, oh, can we use, you know, can you guys make us computers? We're going to talk to dolphins and, you know, not SeaWorld, but, you know, some park. And I'm like, oh, just here we go. You know, it's the commercial, make money off of it, instead of the science. So that has a potential to be abused, for sure. And, you know, the public needs to be perhaps educated about what's legitimate, what's not. So, I mean, but we're humans, we're complicated, cultures are complicated, people have different opinions, but that would be the concern.
Right. And every breakthrough sort of invites hype. And we've seen a lot of hype when it comes to anything that has to do with AI, right? So about the reactions to Dolphin Gemma, what's sort of the most overpromised claim that you've already heard about and that you'd like to maybe debunk?
Well, I'm not sure there's been claims per se. The problem is people get confused as to what it does, right? So it's not a translator, okay? Number one, that's usually how I phrase it. Number one, it's not a translator. It's a generative AI model trained on our Dolphin acoustics. So like when you type in a Google search, it finishes your sentence, right? That's essentially what it's doing. It's saying, from the data I've ingested, I'm going to show what the most likely scenario is after the sample you gave me, right? So that's where we hope to see patterns. So that's one issue. It's just like, it's not some magic translator that's going to go out and, you know, talk to dolphins sort of thing. Most of the reaction I've got, honestly, has been from other researchers with data sets going, I'm excited. Can I have access? Can we get involved? I mean, I'm thinking about maybe we need to do a workshop, you know, an in-house kind of research workshop to bring everybody along and let's explore together. And, you know, will it work for bonobo chimps as well as dolphins? And so, you know, and the model. So the idea of the model, though, is that researcher themselves can retrain the model with their data, right? It's based on dolphin sounds. So I'm not quite sure if that's going to be working with primates. But, you know, this is something Google will have to explore with their people. But yeah, so it opens up a whole new world if people have the time and interest in exploring their data site just to see what we get. And, you know, there's maybe some simple questions you can ask, like, do dolphins that are closely related genetically, species-wise, have similar structures, right? Then it becomes, do they use these patterns of sounds in the same way, right? I mean, so these are just kind of basic questions. Like in our field site, we also have bottlenose dolphins, and the two species interact quite a bit, spotted and bottlenose. So we can see on the video what they do, and we can hear their sounds, but how many of those sounds when they're interacting are they one species sounds? Are they two? Do they have unique sounds they share? Which actually is something other people have found in the wild. When dolphin species interact, sometimes it's easier to have a few mutual signals because it's complicated to learn someone else's communication system, right? So those are just some basic, really intriguing questions, like how well do dolphin species understand each other?
And you say it's not a translator, but could it be? Because like when you think about the first phase of training a new AI model, like ChatGPT 4 or Gemini 2.0 or 1.0, when you talk about this in the past, the first phase is always this, like putting a lot of data into making it complete the sentence. And the second phase was the fine tuning, which was done, refined by humans before. And nowadays it's more and more done by the computers themselves with reinforcement learning. So would it be possible for it to become a translator by using this maybe?
Well, I guess the big question is, could it be a translator? Maybe, but we don't even know if the dolphins have words. Mm-hmm. So how do you cross-translate a word? Like, do they have a word for a specific type of fish? That would make sense. It'd probably be pretty helpful in their world, but we don't know. Mm-hmm. So our idea with this very issue is, once you get these patterns, and we go back to our video, and this is talking about our data set, not anybody else's necessarily, but we can go back to the video and say, what was going on? And then we go like, okay, 100 times we see this pattern when they're digging out a conger eel from the sand, let's say. So then it's like, okay, now let's play that sequence back and either see what they do or let's try to do it ourselves. We can dive down and at least pretend we're digging. I don't know if we can get the fish, but, you know, to show them that we understand what this means.
Yes.
Right? And then say you got the same sequence of sounds, but say one sound was different and it was like, ooh, that's when they're digging out a flounder. Now you have a situation where you're like, does that mean flounder and conger eel? Do they have labels or do they just have a sequence for let's go down and dig in the sand and see what we find, right? So long process, but that's the beauty of the AI stuff is it could really label those sound types specifically and we could test them. It's going to be a long haul for sure, even with a 40-year data set. But the idea of being able to play back and differentiate types of sounds. And, you know, the kind of cool thing, I'm not sure everybody understands when we talk about these two ways we look at their communication, but if we get their natural sequences and we think it means something and we try to ground truth it, we already have the hardware technology, which is the chat underwater computer system, to play back. That's what it does. It can already output sounds or sound sequences. Right now, they're just small synthetic whistles that we label sounds with, but it's already like functional in the water. We wear it. We can swim with it, you know, blah, blah, blah. So that to me is the future, is to like, okay, now it becomes like an underwater speaker, but we're not hanging it off the boat. We're swimming with the dolphins and trying to be more like a dolphin by playing back something we think means X, Y, or Z. But so, yeah.
And when you do that, when you play them something like this, like these synthetic sounds, have you noticed some weird or unexpected behaviors?
No, I wouldn't say behaviors. They're very observant, and we model the playback situation. Again, this is the what's been productive working with other species, is to model the communication system, like with another researcher. Like Irene Pepperberg did that with her parrots, right? You've got a human acting like a parrot. And so the real parrot's watching going, oh, I see how the system works, and I can ask for that thing too, like that human did, right? So we do that in the water with the dolphins. The second researcher wearing the chat unit will ask me for a toy using the system. So the dolphins are watching, oh, when that whistle's played, Denise gives the toy to so-and-so or a piece of sargassum. So now they go, oh, maybe if I make that whistle, maybe I'll get a toy, right? So that's kind of the initial breakthrough, is like, I'm empowered to ask the humans for something. It's not a command. It's not like, go get the sargassum. It's like, you want to play? Ask me for the toy. You have the power, and then we'll play, and then we'll have fun. And, you know, so I mean, it's very possible that they, if they figure out what we're doing, and I can't say they've actually figured it out yet. We're still trying to figure out how they're exploring it. You know, I can imagine where they say like, "Oh, here's a starfish. Whistle, whistle." Maybe that's their word for starfish, right? So now you've got them training you, essentially saying. So we're like also designing in our chat system to say, grab that sound. We think it means something. We put it in our system, label it. So the next time we're in the water with them, we can go down, get a starfish and say, whistle, whistle, you know, starfish. So anyway, there's a lot of possibilities, but it takes a very intricate look at the dolphins and understanding individuals. You know, they have personality, so there's some variation in how they work with you too. But those are, I would say, all the possibilities that Gemma allows in the future too.
Right. And our last question for you is, in what ways do you expect machine learning to keep playing an increasingly important role within your field? What sort of developments can you sort of see on the horizon? You're not quite there yet, but they're just a little bit out of reach that might come, actually.
Yeah, well, I think AI will be really good at quick data processing for large data sets. For example, a lot of marine mammal researchers use passive acoustic monitoring, where you stick a device down, it records 24/7, then you pull up the data, and you've got thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of files, which you have to go through, and you have computer programs that help you with that. But I think AI could go through pretty quickly and say, these two species went by at 10 a.m., and here's a weird sound. We don't know what that is. You know, I think the data processing abilities for monitoring the soundscapes of the ocean will be pretty important. You know, I mean, I like to think it'll also help us with animal communication, but just for environmental monitoring changes, boat noise, poaching. I mean, who knows what it could be used for, as long as it can be, you know, used with the data and we can still get data out of the ocean. So yeah, I think it has really a lot of positive potential for the future. And I think it's there. Honestly, I think we're there already. It's just a matter of people applying it to their data sets, and it'll evolve as researchers look at it, give, you know, the programmers or themselves how to recode things and adjust things. But it's these models are powerful, and I think they're going to help a lot with ocean monitoring in general.
Awesome. Doctor, thank you very much for your time and your knowledge. If people want to maybe reach out or keep an eye on what other projects you are actually working on right now, where should they go?
They can go to our website, which is www.wilddolphinproject.org. They can sign up for our monthly newsletter. We try to highlight some of our work. We have a lot of our talks and blogs on the website, so they can feel free to poke around. And, you know, I wouldn't say it's always the most updated with this kind of work, because we're busy doing the work, but right. We try to at least give a little highlights and things to come. And our scientific papers are all up on the website as well.
Fantastic. Thank you once again. Congratulations on this fantastic work once again.
You're welcome. Obrigado, obrigado.
De nada. E para você que quer decolar na sua carreira em inteligência artificial, na verdade, em múltiplas carreiras, pode ser em IA, pode ser em front-end, pode ser em back-end, pode ser em mobile, pode ser em app security, ciência de dados, análise de dados, né? Foi um papel importante aqui no episódio de hoje, React, Java, enfim, tem inúmeras carreiras da Alura esperando por você, para você sair do zero por meio de um caminho estruturado, com prática, com profundidade também e com orientação para você conquistar domínio real numa habilidade com especialistas do mercado. Você vai ter certificados e reconhecimento de verdade, vai ter foco no que importa com essa trilha guiada e checkpoints que já viram parte do seu portfólio. Então passe em alura.com.br/carreiras ou passe aqui na descrição para pegar o link e cair direto lá e dar uma espiadinha como as carreiras podem ajudar na sua carreira para você sair do zero e conquistar o seu lugar no mercado. E eu e o Fabrício voltaremos na sexta-feira com o nosso tradicional resumão das notícias do mundo da inteligência artificial. Até lá!
Este podcast foi produzido pela Alura. Mergulhe em tecnologia. E Faculdade FIAP. Let's Rock the Future. Edição Rede Gigahertz de Podcasts.